Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to The Way That Leads to Life. I'm Steve Klein. Great to have you listening to our program this morning. Hope that everything is getting off to a good start for you today, that you are looking forward to getting out and worshiping God. We invite you to do that with us this morning at Eastside. We meet at 110 French Way in Athens, Alabama, 9 o'clock this morning for our Bible study and a worship assembly. Why don't you come out and be with us as we honor the God of heaven and study His Word, share our faith, and honor our Savior Jesus Christ. We'd love for you to come out and be with us. If you can't come in person, check us out online. Our services are live streamed. You can go to our Facebook page, Eastside Church of Christ in Athens, or look at our website, eastside-church.com, eastside-church.com. Click on the resources tab and stream our services from there. But again, we'd love to see you this morning. Come out and be with us and worship God if you have that opportunity. Well, here this morning on the program, we'll be talking about the meaning of life. That's a pretty big topic. Have you ever thought about it? What's life all about? For ages, humans have searched for the meaning of life. In the Bible, we have a book that's sort of dedicated to that search. It's called the Book of Ecclesiastes. The writer of the Book of Ecclesiastes identifies himself in chapter 1 and verse 1 as the son of David, the son of King David in the Old Testament. And he also says about himself that he himself was king over Israel in Jerusalem. That's chapter 1 and verse 1. The most natural interpretation of these two facts would point to Solomon as the author of the Book of Ecclesiastes. And you add to that that the author of the Book of Ecclesiastes, while being guided by God, was a man of great wisdom and wealth. As you go through the Book of Ecclesiastes, you see that whoever this is writing, he had access to just all sorts of wealth, all sorts of wisdom, and he had been responsible for immense feats of architecture and landscaping. Again, all of that seems to fit with Solomon. So although Solomon himself is not named in the book, everything that the writer describes about himself and says about himself leads us to believe that it's very likely Solomon who is writing this book. In fact, there are many people that think that that's obviously the case, while some wonder if it might not be somebody else. But as I said, from the information that we have in the book, it seems very likely that the author is indeed Solomon. One writer said about this that Solomon's supernormal wisdom, going with his love of fleshly pleasures, his wealth, his opportunities to make just such an experiment as he described in the Book of Ecclesiastes, his literary gifts, and what we know about his later years all mark out Solomon as the author, and I tend to agree with that. So we're going to be looking somewhat at the Book of Ecclesiastes today, but mainly we're examining the question, what is the meaning of life? And with Solomon, then, in the Book of Ecclesiastes, we'll search for that meaning. What's life all about? The Book of Ecclesiastes is a search for meaning for those who live life under the sun. Solomon uses that phrase, under the sun, quite a number of times in the book. In fact, in chapter 1 and verse 3, the thematic question of this book is, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? So the writer determines, as he says in verse 13, to seek and search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. So here we are as human beings, we're living life under heaven, life under the sun, here on this earth. And the writer of this book is trying to figure out what all is going on under the sun. What's life all about? What is it that we all experience as we live life under the sun? And what good can come from it? What's the ultimate meaning of all of it? Those are the things he's looking for in this book. As he goes through, we see that many of life's experiences are examined in detail. So the author of the book will talk about the work that he does, the things that he accomplishes. He talks about relationships. He talks about wealth. He talks about experiencing pleasure and laughter and just everything that we experience in life. He looks at virtually every aspect of it. He deeply experiences life in all of its facets. And he comes away with this conclusion. In chapter 1 and verse 14, he says, ultimately, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. And he says in chapter 2 and verse 11, there is no profit under the sun. So when you just read that initially, and you hear that initially, you think, well, that's just really depressing. Here's somebody who just made a big deal out of experiencing all of life, everything you can experience in this life under the sun, and he comes away empty. He says, there's no meaning in any of this. It's all emptiness. It's all grasping for the wind. Have you ever tried to catch the wind? That's a pretty futile exercise, isn't it? You try to grasp it with your hands, and you come up empty every time. Even life's greatest accomplishments and most enjoyable experiences are as nothing in the day of one's death. There is no fulfillment in anything in this life under the sun unless and until we consider life above and beyond the sun. And that's really where the book of Ecclesiastes goes in the end. When you get to the very end of the book, it's explained to us that it's our relationship with God heading into eternity that determines the value of this life. What's significant about this life is how it prepares us for the life to come and facing our Maker in the end. So in the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 12, as the book ends in verse 13, Solomon says, let's hear the whole matter, the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. So the whole point of everything, man's all, the whole ultimate meaning of our existence is to please God, to fear him and keep his commandments, because he's going to judge us, and that judgment will determine where we spend eternity. The meaning of this life then isn't in this life. It's not under the sun that we can find ultimate meaning, but it's in the life to come. That's what Solomon concludes. But we want to go through with him through this experiment, through these questions that he's asking, and notice his approach. Notice what he does in examining life and coming to his ultimate conclusion about the meaning of life. And I think it will really help us to understand the meaning of our lives if we understand what it is that Solomon is telling us in this wonderful book. Well, as you go through the book of Ecclesiastes, there are a number of key words and phrases that are found throughout. And those should call various facets of the theme of the book to our mind as we study it. So as we think about certain words and phrases, we realize that those words and phrases are connected to Solomon's search for meaning, for what profit is there under the sun. So the word wisdom is found 28 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. And you see that Solomon is using wisdom, which was given to him by God, as a tool to examine the meaning of life. He says in chapter 1 and verse 13, I set my heart to seek out and to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven, this burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. So Solomon says, I'm trying to figure all of this out, all of what life is about. I'm trying to figure all of that out using wisdom, the wisdom that God, in fact, had given him, as we know. Some form of the question, what profit, is asked about four times in the book of Ecclesiastes, and the phrase under the sun occurs 29 times. So these phrases remind us that, again, Solomon is looking for ultimate meaning. What is life besides just the living of life? Is there more to it? Is there something besides just the experience of living that we get out of it? So that's the question, what profit is there? Profit is something that's over and above. You know, what you put into something, you get out of something more than you put into it. That's the profit. So what's the profit? What's the ultimate profit in living life? And he's examining that as life occurs, as we've said, under the sun. What profit is a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Again, that's the question of chapter 1 and verse 3. Well, another word that is critical to our understanding of the search for meaning in the book of Ecclesiastes is the word vanity. The word vanity occurs 33 times, and the phrase grasping for the wind occurs 9 times. So these words and phrases, they give expression to this question of the book of Ecclesiastes and the answer to it, which Solomon says the answer to the question of what's the meaning of life is, well, it doesn't mean anything. It's completely empty if you leave God out of the picture. If you don't have eternity in your mind when you're thinking about this life, then there's not any significance to any of it. The word vanity just means emptiness. And again, that phrase, grasping for the wind, you reach for something and you don't get anything. You just grasp complete emptiness. So what Solomon is saying to us is that viewed in and of itself, life under the sun is empty. And again, it's particularly evident in chapter 1 and verse 14 and chapter 2 and verse 11 that we've already alluded to. But a really interesting word that Solomon uses a lot in the book of Ecclesiastes is the word better. The word better occurs 23 times in this short book. So that gives rise to this question: how can some things be better than others when everything is vanity and grasping for the wind? You see the question there? If everything is meaningless, then how in the world can some things in life's experience be better than others? But they are, and we'll examine that in just a minute a little more fully. There are some things, and you and I know this just by common sense, that in this life, even if there's no meaning at all, still some experiences are a whole lot better than others, right? It's typically a lot better to eat a steak dinner than to go starving, for instance. So there are some things that are better than others. And Solomon recognizes that and talks about that. There's significance to that, and we'll talk about that some more in just a minute. But again, in Ecclesiastes 12, the conclusion of the whole matter is to fear God and keep His commandments. And that has to be kept in mind constantly as you study the book of Ecclesiastes. If you don't keep that passage in mind without the context of that passage, then there are some sections of Ecclesiastes that appear to commend a focus on worldly things or to glorify despair and to say that since there's no meaning in life under the sun, we should all just give up. That's not at all what the book of Ecclesiastes is saying, and that's not the conclusion that Solomon comes to. And again, we see that at the end of the book. So there are things that are better than other things, but there's something that's best of all that also we need to think about. But let's think about the better things. Under the sun, some things are better than others. You will not discover the best unless you look at life beyond what can be experienced under the sun, unless you look to God. That's what we're saying. But Ecclesiastes declares that although everything is vanity, some things are better than others, and some lives are better than others. In Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 12, listen to this. Solomon says, "I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives." So, you want to live a better life? Well, be happy and do good with your life. Do the best you can with your life. You know, help other people, accomplish good things, do good in your life, and focus on that. And that's better than living a life that never is concerned about anybody else, that never accomplishes anything good, that just is, you know, here and exists and is gone. Living a good life is better than living a poor life or living a life that is full of selfishness and lack of concern for one's fellow man. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 22, Solomon says, "I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, that is his heritage, for who can bring him to see what will happen after him?" So work hard, accomplish things, and rejoice in the things that God enables you to accomplish under the sun. That's better than not accomplishing anything, right? And that's what Solomon is observing, that if a person works hard and can enjoy the fruits of their labors, that's better than not working hard and not having the fruits of your labors. There was a man by the name of Viktor Frankl. He was an Austrian Jew who would become a very famous neurologist and psychiatrist, but his story really begins for us when he was imprisoned in the Auschwitz concentration camp near the end of World War II. While he was in the concentration camp, he contracted typhoid fever. He barely survived, but he did survive, and he lived to publish his life's work, which is a book entitled Man's Search for Meaning, which is kind of our topic this morning. But here's a man who, like Solomon, was interested in the meaning of life. And he spent all of his life thinking about what life is all about. That book is an extremely popular book. It's sold over 12 million copies. It's been translated into 24 languages. You may be familiar with it or not, but it's interesting. Some of the conclusions that this man made. Some of them are kind of close to what Solomon concluded, although he leaves off the most important conclusion, the one that Solomon makes at the end of the book. Viktor Frankl doesn't come to that. But I'm sharing what Frankl did and what he concluded with you for a reason, and that is that Frankl also realized that some things in life are better than others, and some lives are better than others just on their own because somebody works hard and they accomplish good. Some people who endured the concentration camps came out as atheists. Others came out with a deeper belief in God than they went in with. Frankl's experience led him to believe that man can find meaning in his existence in life under the sun, as I said, just by working hard and doing the best with his life. So Frankl wrote this. He says, "Life ultimately means taking the responsibility to find the right answer to its problems and to fulfill the task which it constantly sets for each individual." So what he's saying there is that a better life is a life where you're fulfilling the works that are in front of you, and you're taking care of your responsibilities, you're living a responsible life, and you're doing the best you can do from day to day. Frankl settled then on the better things as his answer to what the meaning of life is. It's just doing the better things. It's experiencing the better things. And that's what he thought life was all about. There are a lot of people today who think that as well. You may be thinking that. You may think, well, life is really just all about doing the best you can, experiencing the better things of life, choosing not to experience the lesser things of life and avoiding those sorts of things. And that's the meaning of life. But that's settling for a meaning of life that is, in the end, really unsatisfactory. If better is the best we can do, then life is still meaningless. Is life not more than just like an hourglass glued to the table that time goes by and then it ends and that's all there is to it? The Bible tells us that life is more than that, that life is more than just the living of it, and that while you can experience some better things in life as you live it, that there is much more to the meaning of life than that. What we have to choose between is a life that is, no matter what good we might choose, will be futile and ultimately meaningless in the end, or a life that means something forever. That's the choice that we have. So let's look specifically at a couple of sections in the book of Ecclesiastes. And I'm opening now to the very first part of the book. And we've mentioned a couple of these verses already, but let's just set out what Solomon is saying to us. Listen to this in Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1. "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun?" So that's how the book begins. In other words, what more is there to life than the sum of our efforts and our experiences? What else do we get out of it? There is, in the life that we're living under the sun, a weary consistency. Things just keep on going on. Everything's the same. Everything changes, but it really stays the same in the end. And Solomon expresses that. He explains it and describes it in these next few verses. Listen to what he says, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 4. "One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and turns toward the north. The wind whirls around continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, 'See, this is a new thing'? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. What is it that Solomon is saying to us here? He's talking about the weariness of life under the sun. Although generations of human beings come and go, the earth remains and continues virtually unchanged. Each generation is trapped, like the one before it, in a futile existence in which there is a lot of motion, but there's no progress. It's like we're running on a hamster wheel. Nothing that man sees or hears satisfies him, like the cycles of the wind and the sun, the water cycle. Energy that we expend in our labors only puts us back where we began. That's what Solomon sees. One commentator said, in looking at what Solomon's talking about here, he says, man, after all of his labor, is no nearer finding rest than the sun, the wind, and the current of the river. His soul will find no rest if he has it not from God. The senses are soon tired, yet still craving what is untried. And that's the human experience. We live life. We want to experience everything. We try to experience everything. Even when we're old, we want, you know, things to experience, and yet we're not finding the ultimate meaning. There is nothing new under the sun, Solomon says. What is done by one generation is going to be forgotten by the next generation. The projects, the values, the ways of life that made up our grandparents' existence have no meaning for the current generation today. When you try to talk to people about how it was in the olden days, you talk to the kids today about how it used to be when you were a kid, and they'll just roll their eyes. That doesn't mean anything to them. What's the difference, really? If you think the greatest pop singer who ever lived was Bing Crosby or Judy Garland, or if you think the greatest pop singer is Ed Sheeran or Lady Gaga, see, it's just one generation goes to the next generation. Every generation has its own opinions about things, has ways of doing things, and that's going to be forgotten by the next generation. Issues and arguments which men strove to settle for all time, they're going to resurface, and succeeding generations will act as if they had never been even addressed as they try to struggle with the same questions and same problems and same arguments that have been going on for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. Young people forget or do not care to learn the lessons of previous generations. Satan is always saying to us, look, here's something new. Here's something for you to experience that no one's ever experienced before. And so I want to think with you about that and the tricks that Satan uses under the sun to get us to focus on this life and not on the life to come. Drinking alcohol. Drinking, you know, leads to poor judgment and life-altering choices. But drinking alcohol is not a new thing. Drinking alcohol has obviously been around for thousands and thousands of years. In the Bible, in the Old Testament, at a time that was nearly 5,000 years ago, the Bible records that a man by the name of Noah, in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 20, began to be a farmer. He planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and was drunk, and he became uncovered in his tent. So here you have an example of a man drinking alcohol 5,000 years ago and doing something really embarrassing and foolish. Wow. You know, the kids today, oh, that's not going to happen to me. There's nothing wrong with drinking alcohol and blah, blah, blah. And we want to experience that. We want to live that part. And so what do they get out of it? Nothing more than Noah did. But that's the kind of thing Satan uses all the time. Drugs are not new. You realize drugs are not new. Again, the drug usage has been around for thousands of years. There was a lot of drug usage when I was a teenager, and that was 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago. In the high school I went to, there was a study done on it. This was out in Colorado. There was a study done on it when I was going to school there. 90% of the students were experimenting with marijuana when I was there. That stuff's not new. Smoking is not new. You know, smoking cigarettes or whatever else folks smoke, that's not a new thing. Discovering the opposite sex, that's not new. That's been around since the beginning of time. Even attraction to the same sex is not new. There are arguments today trying to justify transgender and same-sex relationships, and those arguments are older than Sodom and Gomorrah. They're ingrained in the false man-made religions of ancient and modern pagans. The story of Sodom and Gomorrah is 4,000 years old. And there's nothing new about any of that. But Satan, you know, tricks us into thinking, oh, here's something meaningful. Here's something new to look at. Nobody's ever understood this before. Nobody's ever connected, you know, how these relationships are supposed to work before. That's what Satan wants you to believe. The pagan cults of the Bible that are mentioned in both the Old Testament and New Testament justified unbridled sexual immorality and encouraged it every bit as much as the kind of encouragement of those things that we have in our culture today. What are we saying? We're saying exactly what Solomon said. There is nothing new under the sun. It just keeps on going. Satan wants us to think, oh, we found something new. We finally found something meaningful. We finally found the answers to our problems in whatever. But we haven't. The attractions of this world seem ever-changing, but they're always the same until the day when they are no more. John will write in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. Now there's meaning in life. When you recognize that the stuff in this life is not going to last, it's just temporary. But pleasing God will make a difference forever, forever. And so Jesus asked the question in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26. He asked this question, what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? See, Jesus is really asking the same question Solomon is asking. What profit? That's what Solomon asked. What profit is there in life under the sun? And Jesus is also saying, you could have everything there is to have in life under the sun. You could have all of that, and yet it's meaningless unless you have your soul saved. If you have everything under the sun, and you lose your soul, and you're lost for all eternity, then life is truly meaningless for you. And I don't want it to be meaningless for you. And God doesn't either. God sent his Son so you can live forever with him. God has given us his word so that we can know how to please him and live lives under the sun that prepare us for lives in heaven itself. We all of us need to live life preparing to meet our God. That's what Solomon concludes in the book of Ecclesiastes. Again, in chapter 12 and verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments. This is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. You see, God knows about your life. He knows about your whole life. And he's going to bring everything that you ever did, said, or thought into judgment one day before his throne. And he will determine on that day where you're going to spend eternity. And then this life will have meaning for you if he allows you to enter heaven with him. God is a good God. He wants to save you. He wants your life to have meaning. He created you to live a meaningful life and to become like his only begotten Son. So focus your life on eternal things. Don't look at the temporary things. As Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 18, we do not look at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. The things which are seen are temporary. The things which are not seen are eternal. Live your life with a view to eternity, and then your life will have meaning. Live your life striving to please God, walking the way that leads not just to life under the sun, but to life eternal.